A senior executive once hired a consultant to fix a problem department. After weeks of interviews, the consultant discovered something uncomfortable. The real problem wasn't the department at all. It was the toxic relationship between that department head and the CEO himself. The very person who'd hired the consultant to help was unknowingly sabotaging his own team. This scenario plays out constantly in our lives, revealing a troubling truth. Most of us are terrible at helping, despite our best intentions. We rush in with solutions before understanding problems. We offer advice that makes us feel wise, but leaves others feeling diminished. We mistake our need to feel helpful for actual helpfulness. What looks like generosity often becomes a subtle form of control, and what feels like support can reinforce dependence. Every helping exchange triggers an invisible transaction. When someone holds a door, the recipient quickens their pace and offers thanks. Not mere courtesy, but essential social economics maintaining relationship equilibrium. Break these unwritten rules and discomfort floods in. We pay attention, invest in relationships, build social capital. When asking for help, people temporarily surrender status, placing themselves one down while the helper ascends to one up, gaining authority whether deserved or not. This explains why people who've just fallen immediately insist, "I'm okay," despite obvious injury, why professionals struggle silently rather than seek guidance, why real men don't ask for directions persists. American culture particularly prizes self-reliance, making help-seeking feel like failure. Senior executives schedule consultant meetings in hidden conference rooms. Managers resist bringing in experts even when desperately needed. Understanding this social architecture matters. It shapes every helping interaction, determining whether our assistance truly helps or subtly harms. Consider technical support interactions. Does the representative gauge your comfort level first or launch into complex explanations? That difference separates helpful assistance from frustrating interference. When someone asks for directions to Main Street, the unhelpful person mechanically provides them. The helpful person asks, "Where are you trying to go?" and might suggest a better route entirely. This distinction between addressing surface requests and uncovering underlying needs appears everywhere. Children asking for homework help may actually be expressing anxiety about school performance or seeking connection. A spouse requesting tea might be communicating loneliness or genuinely just wanting tea. Even professionals fail when they don't address clients' actual needs. A consultant might deliver brilliant analysis that sits unused because it ignores organizational culture. A doctor might prescribe medication without ensuring the patient can afford treatment. Both parties start with vast areas of mutual ignorance. Helpers don't know whether clients will understand their advice or possess skills to implement it, while clients don't know if helpers genuinely have the knowledge to help or can be trusted. When someone asks for help, you face three roles. The expert provides information when clients know what they need. The doctor diagnoses problems and prescribes solutions. The process consultant focuses on the relationship itself, helping clients discover what they truly need through genuine inquiry. Most default to expert or doctor roles because they feel efficient and culturally valued. These approaches work for simple situations, but fail with complexity. The doctor role particularly appeals because it empowers helpers and justifies fees through concrete deliverables, yet it carries hidden dangers. Helpers struggle to obtain accurate information without trust, and clients often reject diagnoses they haven't helped develop. Process consultation takes a different approach. Instead of rushing to solutions, you focus on communication through humble inquiry, asking questions from genuine curiosity rather than testing assumptions. This means starting with attentive silence, using minimal prompts like "tell me more," and seeking concrete details that help clients structure their thoughts. The core assumption? Clients must remain proactive because only they truly own their problems and know what will work in their context. Pure inquiry begins with the hardest thing for most helpers: shutting up. Attentive silence and simple prompts like "tell me more" encourage full disclosure without steering the conversation. Genuine curiosity about concrete details builds the client's confidence while gathering crucial information you'd otherwise miss. As relationships develop, diagnostic inquiry focuses attention on specific elements. How did that make you feel? This builds diagnostic capacity, but consciously redirects the conversation. Confrontational inquiry introduces your ideas. Did that make you angry? Or could you try this approach? While powerful, this risks making clients feel subordinate and may shut down information sharing. One breakthrough illustrates pure inquiry's power. A company's top team consistently failed to complete meeting agendas despite addressing behavioral issues. Nothing changed until one simple question emerged. Where does the agenda come from? Learning the president's secretary randomly assembled it prompted the group to implement a priority system, dramatically improving meetings. That single inquiry, born from genuine curiosity rather than assumed expertise, accomplished what months of expert advice couldn't. The helper's subsequent choices depend on their sense of the communication process, time constraints, relationship dynamics, and what would be most useful at that moment. A consultant's experience during his wife's recovery revealed how help can harm. He offered assistance with self-serving rationales like, "This is good exercise for me," to reduce her guilt. The breaking point came when he interjected during a nurse's visit about her symptoms. She expressed anger. He'd undermined her relationship with healthcare providers by speaking for her. As she improved, he struggled to relinquish control. Her different pace and methods challenged his routines. Only through self-awareness and humble inquiry about her preferences could he shift from expert to process consultant. This pattern appears everywhere. Parents doing homework for children rob them of learning opportunities. Managers solving every problem create learned helplessness. Friends offering constant advice prevent others from developing problem-solving capabilities. The most insidious form of unhelpfulness masquerades as generosity. It makes the helper feel valuable while keeping the helped person dependent. Helping isn't a technique, it's a relationship. Your silence, questions, and rush to solutions all communicate something. Effective helpers recognize they cannot truly understand how a problem feels to someone with different context and personality. This humility opens space for genuine discovery. Check your emotions and intentions before offering or receiving help. When help efforts fail, reflect on whether you fell into common helping traps. As a helper, always ask what they truly want rather than assuming you know. Begin in the process consulting role until you have enough information to determine if other roles are appropriate. When stuck, simply tell the client, "At this point, I'm stuck. I don't know what to do next to be helpful." This empowers them and acknowledges you're working on their problem, not imposing your solution. With age comes the dangerous temptation to believe we know how to help, but every situation presents unique dilemmas requiring fresh eyes. The path forward isn't mastering techniques, but cultivating relationships built on inquiry, equity, and recognizing that the person you're helping knows their life better than you ever will.